Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. I'm delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Carl Gibson. He is co-founder of US Uncut, and he is the lead organizer of the Shut the Chamber campaign. You can go to shutthechamber.org, and the reference there is to the United States Chamber of Commerce. Carl Gibson, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Hey, David, thanks for having me on the program. Big fan of what you guys do.
It's great to have you on here. What's the matter with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Oh, where should we start? Actually, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I should say first off, is not like most people's local and county chambers of commerce. You know, those are associations of business owners in the town and the community who, you know, care about each other and want to see the help, you know, want to help the town rise up and you know, and that's all well and good. What our problem is with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which, you know, rather than representing mom-and-pop small business owners, actually works to strengthen the corporate stranglehold on Washington right now by lobbying for anything from additional corporate tax breaks and loopholes overseas to the dismantling of financial regulation to dismantling of environmental legislation to more wars for the military-industrial complex's profit. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is essentially multinational corporations lobbying arm in Washington, D.C. And if people go to opensecrets.org, they'll actually see that Open Secrets has the U.S. Chamber of Commerce ranked number one in all lobbyist spending in 2012. They spent $136 million just on influence in Congress. To give you an idea of how much that is, the two biggest labor unions, AFL-CIO and SEIU, both spent a combined $7 million. So big corporations are spending millions and millions of dollars to influence Congress and elections, and we all know that. The chief voice behind that effort is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And so that's what the Shut the Chamber campaign is all about, is taking that force head on.
And so there's a public record of how much the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is spending on things, but are big corporations and other wealthy interests using it as a front group? Does it hide where its money is coming from?
Yeah, actually, the U.S. Chamber is really, really good at not disclosing its donors. And in fact, they got in some hot water in 2010. They were the chief engine behind the right-wing takeover of Congress in 2010. And a lot of the donations that they used to flood the election process with dark money came from undisclosed donors. And so there was a big brouhaha back in 2010 over whether or not those donors came from foreign donors and from multinational corporations trying to, you know, spend their money to influence an election in an entirely different country. And so because they don't have to disclose those donors, nobody really knows where that money comes from. And it's just all the more troubling that, you know, that foreign corporations and these big wealthy special interests have so much power in Washington. And we see them as the main reason why Congress is failing to act. You know, like Congress is full of incredibly incompetent people who really don't have a conscience or a soul for that matter. Most of us know that. But the reason that they're acting that way and passing the bills that they're passing is to, you know, appease their corporate campaign donors. You know, it's kind of like how corporations see themselves not beholden to the community, but rather beholden to the interests of their shareholders. They don't see themselves as, you know, agents of social responsibility. They want to increase shareholder dividends. And so these politicians in Washington are the same way. They're not behaving in the interest of the people, and the actions that they're taking as lawmakers aren't for the welfare of the people. You know, rather it's looking out for their shareholders, which are the corporations that donate to their campaign. And so really the root of all these problems, whether it be war, whether it be whether it be environmental problems, whether it be the financial and, you know, problems associated with Wall Street, that all leads back to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And so we're all pretty mad about what's happening in Washington. So instead of marching on Congress, we're marching on the people who are pulling Congress's string and the people who are holding the purse. And those people are the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
It's funny, the groups that want to get the money out of our politics have largely given up, at least in the immediate time frame, on getting the money out of our politics. They're hopeful just to get disclosure of where the money comes from. I don't know how much it will help us to know, but it seems like the U.S. chamber might still remain a way for wealthy interests to funnel their money undisclosed into our politics unless legislation requires that that be exposed as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is this whole disclosure problem is, you know, it was exacerbated with the 2010 Citizens United ruling in the Supreme Court, but, you know, it's always been a fact of American politics that, you know, people are always going to find loopholes around the law, and whether or not legislation gets passed, you know, it's still the problem that, you know, a few wealthy special interests ought not to have as much influence as they have, but unfortunately that's the case. And so, you know, actually this whole march, Operation Green Jobs, that we're undertaking right now, and I believe as this broadcast airs, we're going to be nearing D.C., and we'll have been marching for 150 miles since, but, you know, this is a march for not just political spending disclosure, not just for, you know, not just for the unemployed to have jobs, not just for the climate to be healed, but, you know, again, going after the same forces who, again, are made up of a very small amount of people and working directly against the interests of all Americans, and not just Americans, but people all over the world. You know, this is really kind of the way it got in 1929, right before the big financial collapse. You know, a whole bunch of wealth had been concentrated at the top, and wealthy special interests had been controlling Washington for a while. And so, you know, the whole crash of 1929, that was really the breaking point. And so I think we're getting close to that breaking point again. And before this whole top-heavy economy collapses, I think it's time for us to really address the root causes of these problems and, you know, get our voices heard, whether that be in the streets or in the media. And, of course, the corporate-owned media won't pick up our message, which is, you know, why it's so important that people like you are doing what you do. So, yeah, this is kind of an ongoing struggle in the people versus big money fight. That's really the most important fight right now.
Yeah, it seems like wealth is getting more and more concentrated, and we have policies advancing and accelerating that. And yet you have this notion that you brought up, this comparison with labor unions, as if working people's money is somehow a balance or somehow challenges the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's and its allies' money in our political system. And the comparison seems absurd. I mean, the vast majority of Americans, it seems clear, would be better represented and more equitably represented if all the money were cleaned out, including contributions to politicians from labor unions.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what it all boils down to. You know, if we want a political system and thereby an economy that prioritizes the wealthy over the poor, that prioritizes the interests of the few over the many, it all really comes down to, you know, if we're willing to look around and accept the system for what it is, or if we want to, you know, if we want to challenge that. So I mean, this is kind of a common fact of life in America. You know, everybody from all political backgrounds acknowledges that our government has been hijacked and captured by corporate special interests. You know, this isn't really our government anymore. It's certainly not the government that the framers had dreamed up back in 1776 and 1784. You know, this is the government's long since been hijacked. Now, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce certainly isn't the only agent, but the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is the one single organization that really, since 1974, has been leading the corporate charge on our democracy. I'll give you an example. Your listeners might have heard of the Powell Memo back in 1971, where Lewis F. Powell, who was a corporate lawyer at the time, who would later become a Supreme Court justice, he wrote a letter to the then president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce back in 1971. And he was citing the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement of the 60s, and you know, especially all the protests that had been breaking out, as cause that the left had taken over political discourse in America. And of course, you know, that idea is laughable now, but, you know, back then, Lewis Powell wrote this memo saying the U.S. Chamber of Commerce should heed by this outline that he had written for businesses and corporations to ensure a pro-business climate both in politics and education, as well as in the media and in culture. And so I encourage people to look at the Powell memo and kind of read that over, because that whole memo talks about how the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has led the charge in a largely successful coup of our government. And so really since then, corporations have dominated our political discourse, and the people haven't been able to rise up effectively and fight it back so far.
I think the original of that memo is at a university here in Virginia, and we couldn't be prouder. I also am speaking to you from not far from Thomas Jefferson's former slave plantation here in central Virginia, and it probably strikes a lot of people as odd to hear you say that we have become far less equitable than our founders, these wealthy white male slave owners envisioned for our society. How can it be that we have become more of an elite, more of an unbalanced aristocratic society now than what was envisioned by these slave-owning capitalists who put the place together?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Thomas Jefferson. You know, both Jefferson and Ben Franklin, along with Washington and all those guys, believe that, a whole section of this country, based on the color of their skin, was only one-fifth of a person. And, even then, slave-owning Thomas Jefferson, he was quoted as saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it won't be long until corporations and the moneyed aristocracy challenge our government to a show of strength and bid defiance to the laws of this country. You know, even these slave-owning elitists saw that corporate power hijacking democracy was a real threat and tried to stop it from happening. So the fact that we've gone even farther from not just oppressing native lands and extracting resources from Native American communities, now the corporations that have hijacked this government are doing the same thing from Israel and Palestine all the way to the Middle East, all the way to, China and Japan and Korea and Vietnam. And so this is kind of a global corporate empire. And again, this all kind of goes back to the original Powell memo from 1971, and U.S. Chamber's been, really leading the charge on that. So, yeah, this isn't really just American imperialism we're fighting now. This is a global corporate cable, and their power stretches beyond America. And the multinational corporations that supply a lot of their funding, they don't really claim any country as residents. And so, by challenging this chief vehicle that they have through the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we realize that, taking on an enemy this big is going to be a long-term struggle. And so really this is all about just empowering people and getting them to stand up and fight back and realize that, power still can be in the people's hands if we want to rise up and take it.
We are speaking with Carl Gibson, who is lead organizer of the Shut the Chamber campaign, which you can find at shutthechamber.org. I wonder, you started out mentioning how different the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is from people's local hometown Chamber of Commerce that seems to be an organization typically more focused on reasonable, rational, mainstream, often majority policies, whereas the U.S. Chamber of Commerce seems to be pushing this radical right-wing agenda. What are the connections? Do the local chambers fund and support and endorse the U.S. Chamber?
Sure, yeah. It's this hierarchy that's in place right now, where local and county chambers of commerce, which are largely made up of small, small six-figure enterprises, five-figure enterprises, restaurants and bars and hardware stores and such, paying dues to their local and county chambers. And that's all well and good. But then those local and county chambers pay dues to the state chambers of commerce. So, and then state chambers of commerce like the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce Association or the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, those state chambers of commerce pay dues to the U.S. Chamber. And so our goal of this campaign is not only to do direct action like this 150-mile Operation Green Jobs march that we're on right now, but it's also to get loyal customers of their favorite locally owned small businesses, get them to talk about their business association, get them to talk about where they stand ideologically and how they feel about this corporate special interest takeover of our government, and then get those business owners to collectively petition their local and county chambers to divest from organizations that are funding the chamber's efforts. I think it's very disingenuous of the U.S. Chamber, who says that they're the voice of small business, to take small business owners' dues through this process and then use it to directly lobby on behalf of their competitors. You ask the neighborhood hardware store owner how they feel about Walmart. you know, Walmart moves into a town, and then they get a road built for them. They get, you know, tax breaks hand over fist. And people like the ones who head the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are the ones who make sure all those goodies to the big corporations keep flowing from the municipality. And so it's this process that's bleeding these communities dry. And I think small business owners, if you can get them all to organize together and collectively divest from the U.S. Chamber, it will significantly hurt their ability to lobby legislators in Congress and in the state houses. It'll significantly affect their abilities to flood the election process with dark money. And while they'll still get money, I'm sure, from, you know, corporations like ExxonMobil and GE and Pfizer, it'll still be a big hit for the organization. And we'll also achieve the impact of having local small business owners join other very progressive and sustainable business alliances, like the Amoeba Alliance or the Main Street Alliance. You know, there's all kinds of other organizations and associations out here that care about independent alternative businesses and alternative economies, and helping local small business owners rise up and, you know, be big stakeholders in the community. So that's what we're really trying to move towards in the long term.
Tell people what Amoeba stands for.
Oh, sure. That's the American Independent Business Alliance.
What is this 150-mile moving activity you've got? Where are you starting out? Where will you be? When? And what's the idea behind this project as you move toward the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
We met in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on Saturday, May 18th. We gathered, and what we did was we reached out to families who have been hardest hit by this economy and by this corporate takeover of government. People who had their jobs sequestered, you know, by congressional austerity. Teachers who were from schools that got closed down. You know, people whose homes are directly in the line of things like the Keystone XL pipeline. We're reaching out to all these people and getting them to march with us, and their families as well. We've got children on the march. And we're marching from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to Washington, D.C., where on the 24th, on this Friday, we'll be directly at the U.S. Chamber's front door. And so what this march is really about is, you know, sharing everybody's stories and speaking out and being heard in spite of the blackout from the mainstream corporate-owned media, and in spite of, you know, everybody telling us that we'll just have to sit there and take it and accept what they're doing to us. You know, in fact, if people go to shutthechamber.org, they'll be guided to our front page, which talks about this march that we're doing and gives some details, you know, shows the route that we're marching. But it also gives people a form for them to simply upload a photo of them holding a sign explaining their situation, and then uploading that photo to our website, and with their permission, we'll share it on social media. And this process is called the Virtual March. And so it's kind of like the We Are the 99% Tumblr that happened when Occupy Wall Street took off. It's a way for ordinary people to have their voices heard and have their faces and words seen by the whole world. And we're trying to do that with people who've been affected by the Chamber's policies. And so, yeah, I encourage people to go and join our virtual march at shutthechamber.org, and they can monitor our progress there. We're live blogging and live tweeting this march as well. So the goal of this march, again, called Operation Green Jobs. And, you know, when you ask most people what their main concerns are, it's usually the lack of jobs and the climate crisis that's bearing down on us. So, you know, what better way to put people to work than to, you know, radically redesign our energy grid to where we can use sustainable means of energy to, you know, to power this country. And so that's what we're demanding. And we hope our voices get heard and that people join us along the way.
So anybody can join in virtually if they've got the computer and the ability. But people can in the Mid-Atlantic area can join in reality and join you on Friday the 24th of May at 10 a.m. in front of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce across the park from the White House. Is that right?
Yeah, it's right around the corner from the White House, and it's not far from the Supreme Court. And it kind of says a lot about the state of our government. You know, President Obama regularly meets with the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, to push his pro-corporate agenda. And in fact, the Supreme Court has a 100% victory rating since Obama's been president in the Supreme Court. And a third of all Supreme Court cases that have been brought up since then are brought up by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. You know, they ask, you know, can we make it harder for people to file a class action lawsuit against their employer? Can we get these environmental laws deregulated? You know, can we build this pipeline? And so the Supreme Court is kind of the U.S. Chamber's willing ally in this takeover of our government. So they're a very apt target, and we hope a lot of people come out and join us and march with us.
This raises a question, because you said, you know, you're going after not the government, as if that were almost foolish or naive, but after the people who are pulling their strings. It almost seems to me that you have to go after both. If the president is walking across the street or vice versa to hear the lobbying voice of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and then do their bidding rather than the will of the majority of Americans, but the protesters only show up over across the park, behind the trees, at the chamber, and not at the White House, the president is sort of getting off the hook. And same with the Congress, and same with the Supreme Court. Shouldn't we go after the people pulling the strings and the people volunteering to be puppets?
Oh, I mean, we absolutely should. I think I just want to make it clear that, you know, because this is in Washington, we're right in the proximity of all those targets, and we'll likely do a march after a rally at the chamber to those other targets. But, you know, we want to make clear that this is the main string puller of both Congress and the Supreme Court, and as well as the White House. You know, this is kind of where it all leads to, and this is the root of the problem. You know, Congress and the White House and the Supreme Court, those are all really big branches from that tree, maybe the trunk of the tree itself. But those trees' roots are the corporate cash that flows through and makes them do what they do. It's like you said, Dave, you know, we've got a majority of Americans who say we need Congress to focus on job creation, we need him to focus on climate change, we want to get pulled out of Afghanistan. But at the same time, we've got the U.S. Chamber of Commerce telling Congress through the lobbying process that they need to build the Keystone XL pipeline and do what James Hansen would call game over for the climate. You know, they want to extract fossil fuels. They want to go to wars. You know, Obama increased our troop presence in Afghanistan, and he's extended the deadline until 2024. Now, the American people weren't happy with that decision, but Northrop Grumman and Boeing and, you know, war contractors like GE and Verizon, those companies were all very happy. And these companies are all members of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So, it's, you know, once you just do a little bit of digging, it's really easy to see who's really running the show in Washington. And again, all roads point to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
There's a company about a block west of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce headquarters called General Atomics, and we protested both of those locations during the Occupy heyday because General Atomics manufactures our killer flying robots. Well, some of them. They clearly are one little branch of the tree as well. What other? We've talked about pushing bad energy policies. What other policies does the U.S. Chamber of Commerce push that the majority of Americans oppose?
Yeah, here's a great example. You know, we all remember back in 2009 and 2010 when healthcare was the big debate. What the U.S. Chamber of Commerce did, this is really astounding. I think they spent $160 million on lobbying that year, and $88 million of that $160 million that they spent, $88 million of that came from AHIP, American Health Insurance Providers. That's the health insurance's big lobby in Washington. So they gave the U.S. Chamber of Commerce all that money to run ads opposing any sort of healthcare reform at all. And so the U.S. Chamber of Commerce was very successful in defining the conversation early on. And even though most Americans, you know, they wanted to see a public option, they wanted to see a single-payer system, you know, ideally. But this administration didn't even discuss a single-payer option, and the public option was voted outright before negotiations even began. And that kind of gives a clue to how powerful the chamber's interest was in healthcare. Another example is in the, you know, you mentioned the war industry, but in the whole process of, you know, not just troops being sent overseas, but the making of missiles and the making of drones and the whole complex of war and machinery of death, you know, that's all. Those companies are members of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they have a valid interest in seeing wars continue, because wars are very profitable for the people who are members of the chamber. Now, as far as healthcare and wars are concerned, you can move on to environmental policy, where, you know, Tom Donahue of the U.S. Chamber has gone on record repeatedly saying fracking is really great, and more people should do fracking, and the extraction of natural gas through hydraulic fracturing isn't that bad, and so they're running a lot of PR now in places like Pennsylvania and Colorado, where fracking is a big debate, and trying to really push people in the pro-fracking direction. And they're doing a lot of that with lobbying and a lot of campaign spending. So, you know, you can really find any issue, and you can eventually trace it back to the chamber's donations to people's campaigns or to lobbying efforts in the State House and otherwise. You know, another great example is in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin was famous for Scott Walker's anti-union bill that got forced through the legislature. The U.S. Chamber's state affiliate, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, they're called WMC. You know, WMC not only put Scott Walker and the GOP legislature in power, but they've also frequently lobbied for bills like a mining bill that just passed, where essentially public resources are sold to private multinational corporations to do whatever they want to with it. You know, so this is not only a national issue, but it's also a state-by-state issue. And a lot of issues that are very personal to a lot of communities, these are all issues that are being attacked by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. You know, they're a really pervasive enemy.
I think there probably should have been more protesting at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce during that health insurance coverage reform debacle than there was. So it's very encouraging that you're marching to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and I'm looking very much forward to joining you there on Friday the 24th. But you're based in Wisconsin, and I'll be going in August to the Democracy Convention and the Veterans for Peace Convention there in Madison. Will you be around at the time?
I should be, and I also wanted to remind your listeners, along with the Democracy Convention and the Veterans for Peace Convention, from August 1 through 5th is the Student Power Convergence. And there's a really, really powerful student movement that's rising in America right now. So if you want to see the next future generation of really powerful organizers, that's definitely a good place to be. So, yeah, Madison, Wisconsin, pretty much throughout the whole month of August from the very beginning to the very end, you're going to see a lot of really radical action there.
And all of these conventions and conferences are working together. So Madison, Wisconsin really is going to be the place to be organizing and self-educating in August. Another wonderful place to go is shutthechamber.org. You also have an organization and a website called U.S. Uncut. In just the minutes we have left, can you tell people what's happening there?
Sure. You know, U.S. Uncut began in February 2011, right around the time the union protests in Wisconsin were happening. And, you know, we started doing creative direct actions, tying corporate tax dodging to all the austerity and budget cuts that are happening. You know, it's a very easy connection to make. And so now we're about to enter step two. You know, we're really sucked into the energy created by Occupy Wall Street. We're about to launch a whole new website and incorporate as a co-op organization. We're going to officially, you know, have co-op status. And we're going to give people a voice directly in how this organization runs, what our actions are going to be, how we target austerity effectively in the future. So I encourage everybody to, in the meantime, follow us on Twitter at U.S. Uncut and like the U.S. Uncut Facebook page. And you can keep up with our updates there.
Terrific advice. We'll have all those links up on Talk Nation Radio's website. Carl Gibson is the co-founder of U.S. Uncut and lead organizer of the Shut the Chamber campaign at shutthechamber.org. Carl, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks a lot for having me, David. It was a pleasure.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.